Hello, I'm Kevin Keith. In this episode of Skeptical Ethics, I'd like to revisit a topic previously addressed here, namely the persistence of misogyny in the skeptical community in light of a much-talked-about incident at the Women in Secularism conference last weekend. Before we start, let me remind listeners that the Skeptical Ethics series attempts to apply skeptical reasoning to value-based issues, such as moral or cultural controversies. New listeners, or those who want to review the basic conceptual grounding of that enterprise, may wish to download the first Skeptical Ethics segment, Does Skepticism Lead to Agreement?, which appeared in Episode 2 of the Skeptical Connections podcast, and the second segment, Moral Agreement Among Skeptics, from Episode 3 of Skeptical Connections, for useful background. About 2 months ago, on Skeptical Connections podcast number 8, Skeptical Ethics addressed the need for skeptics to apply critical thinking and skeptical critique to themselves and their own movement, and particularly to the concerns over the hostility or harassment women in the movement often complain of experiencing. I said, quote, I think the one fundamental test of our commitment to skepticism is the willingness to apply the tools and critical perspective of skepticism to skepticism itself and to the skeptical community as part of society. The ongoing debate over harassment and misogyny provides an unfortunately necessary opportunity to do so. End quote. This week, I'd like to do so, though this is indeed an unfortunate necessity. As many listeners will be aware, a conference devoted to Women in Secularism was held May 17 through 19 in Washington, D.C., sponsored by the Center for Inquiry, or CFI, one of the best-known and most influential organizations in skepticism in the U.S. The opening welcome was given by Ron Lindsay in his capacity as CEO of the sponsoring organization. The reaction to his remarks was immediate and hostile, launching a flood of angry live tweets that began while Lindsay was still speaking and kicking off an aggrieved discussion that continues almost a week later. I should say here that Ron Lindsay and I attended the same graduate program, though not at the same time, and we met once long ago. He struck me as a nice guy, but that's as much as I know about him. For that matter, I've crossed paths through blogs and Twitter with some of the speakers and attendees who are now so angry at him, and have generally positive impressions of them as well. I don't think I have a partisan loyalty in this debate, but I can't help feeling saddened by it. At any rate, Lindsay's opening speech at the WIS conference skipped the formal welcome and introductions that would be normal for that kind of address, and instead took as its topic the relationship between secularism and social movements, particularly feminism. He began by analyzing the question, asking whether secularism is necessarily concerned with social justice issues, then whether that specifically implies feminism, and then what the definition of feminism might be, and whether there may be multiple perspectives among feminists. Quote, there's a definition that I'm sure many of you are familiar with, a definition supplied by bell hooks, and that is, the feminist movement is a movement that seeks to end sexism, sexist exploitation, and oppression. In the abstract, that seems about right. But the problem with this definition is it just pushes our questions back further. What is sexism? What actions constitute sexist exploitation? I don't think you're going to find unanimity of opinion on the answers to those questions even within the feminist movement. End quote. The largest part of Lindsay's talk focused on the concept of privilege, most specifically whether criticizing privilege could itself be a tool of oppression. He said, quote, I think it's a concept that has some validity and utility. It's also a concept that can be misused as a way to try to silence critics, end quote. He explained further, quote, I'm talking about the situation where the concept of privilege is used to try to silence others as a justification for saying, shut up and listen. Shut up because you're a man and you cannot possibly know what it's like to experience X, Y, and Z, and anything you say is bound to be mistaken in some way, but of course you're too blinded by your own privilege to even realize that. This approach doesn't work. It certainly doesn't work for me. It's the approach that the dogmatist who wants to silence critics has always taken because it beats having to engage someone in a reasoned argument. End quote. Lindsay's remarks were received very negatively. Part of it was the apparent presumption in his explaining feminism to a crowd filled with experienced feminist activists at a feminist conference. It was his remarks on privilege that unleashed a firestorm, however. The most common objection was that it was a kind of obliviousness and arrogance for a highly privileged individual, a white man with both a PhD and a JD, who enjoyed a long corporate law career and is now CEO of a major nonprofit organization, and was giving the opening speech at the conference, to argue that the privileged are being oppressed or silenced. Also, the idea that the concept of privilege was being used to silence critics seemed to smack of false equivalency. The non-privileged are constantly silenced and disempowered, directly and indirectly, while asking the privileged to shut up and listen to the less privileged is a request to broaden dialogue across social divisions, and thus is in no way equivalent to the oppression of the disadvantaged. I think I can understand what Lindsay was trying to do. As someone with graduate training in philosophy myself, his argumentation, if not his particular claims, sounds very familiar to me. Argument analysis is a standard tool of academic philosophy, and the method of surveying possible logical positions, defining terms, pursuing logical relationships and implications to deeper and deeper levels, and applying analytical tools systematically to every position in a debate is very much an academic philosopher's, and also a lawyer's, way of approaching a controversy. Also, what philosophers have called the view from nowhere, the idea that the thinker has no personal connection to the ideas and can take an objective approach to all sides of a controversy, is another standard philosophical conceit. From this approach, when Lindsay recites already well-known examples of disagreements between feminists to an audience of feminists, he probably thinks he is just being logically comprehensive, not talking down to his listeners. And in The View from Nowhere, it may seem as if the danger of silencing the privileged stands in a logical way, if not a practical one, on the same plane with the danger of dismissing, excluding, or oppressing the unprivileged. I suspect Lindsay was surprised when what likely seemed to him to be perfectly obvious logical observations got such a hostile reception. That seemed evident when the very next day he responded to criticism from Rebecca Watson by saying that the doctrine of shut up and listen is, quote, a horribly misguided, logically infirm understanding of communication. This model of communication asks us to put our critical thinking on hold merely because the person speaking comes from a marginalized group. End quote. Of course, he also described Watson as inhabiting an alternate universe, engaging in smear, and as intellectually dishonest, which seemed kind of hostile. There's now an active campaign of protest to the CFI organized by the group Secular Woman, and others are pledging to withhold financial support from CFI. So that worked out well. What's missing here is a sense of proportionality, or of responsiveness to the practical, real-world context in which arguments such as these are engaged, or especially in which privilege enters into people's lives and their relations with others. Giving an introductory-level lecture complete with definitions about feminism to a group of feminists implicitly suggests that they don't understand their own movement and need to be educated about it by a man who appeared to be grasping the subject in only a superficial way himself. Asking whether feminism has a place in secularism, even though Lindsay stated explicitly that it does and that secularism should be a movement for social progress, similarly implies that that issue is controversial. And worst, to complain from a position of privilege that being identified as having privilege is a burden, and to complain that the demand that those who have had the limelight and the power of controlling and defining the discourse over social and political issues for years, decades, centuries, should now give others their turn to be heard and to take for themselves the opportunity to listen and learn is unfair is a particularly galling false equivalency. The privileged are subject to harm and to unfairness. They have moral interests in their own right, of course, but they are subject to nothing like the silencing of the outcast and underclasses. Dismissing the demand for credence, even if expressed in a confrontational way, without acknowledging the fundamental asymmetry of status and power that is the reason social movements exist in the first place, and especially when the complaint of unfairness against the privileged is put forth by someone who is in many ways privileged himself, is a form of moral blindness. Failing to recognize that the search for social equality is not an exercise in logical analysis, but a practical task of identifying and empowering the disempowered, and that to contribute to that search requires not merely approving intellectually of its goals, but actively working to make that empowerment real, as, for instance, when speaking from the platform of a conference on women in secularism to an audience of secular women, is another lack of appreciation of practical context and the lived reality of oppression. Ron Lindsay's remarks at the conference were ill-considered, and his later response to Rebecca Watson was gratuitously offensive and insulting. In both cases, he failed to take the step to seeing the situation his critics were speaking from, and that it was not symmetrical to or in balance with his own. He failed in recognizing that the view from nowhere is especially inappropriate in social movements motivated by the particular inequities of the very particular somewheres in which everyone lives. In my previous segment on this topic, I said, quote, skeptics must be skeptical of themselves first and foremost. If they aren't honest enough to analyze their own behavior, who's going to listen to them on anything else? Misogyny is morally bad in its own right. It's also a sign of bad skepticism. End quote. I wish I'd had a chance to tell Ron Lindsay that before his speech. I'd be glad to hear your comments or responses directed to skepticalconnections.com.